Excuse Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. 34 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. So to come on the program from WVNN in Huntsville, Alabama, Dale Jackson, for some reason we're having him on. We do every Monday. I don't know why. Columnist Pete Ream in the 11 o'clock hour. Obviously, we'll talk education with him. And then finally, in the last, in that bottom block, or the bottom of the hour, I should say, 11 o'clock hour, U.S. Senate candidate Katie Boyd Britt will join us. So a lot of that to come and more. Please stick around, 251-343-0106, if you would like to weigh in on anything. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest, very kind to come on the program. Always a lot to talk about on multiple fronts, with State Senator Clyde Chambliss of Prattville. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing well. Recovering from the session, getting back into the swing of things, and just look forward to visiting with you today.
Yeah, and we appreciate you making time. I mean, you got just out of session there, and we're still kind of at it here. Obviously, some things didn't get done, but I think the big one, the big picture, and this really impacts your district, this prison question, you know, obviously a course change. Now that the lease build situation doesn't look like it's feasible, there's just not the financing there to do it. But now the ball's back in the court of the legislature. What do you think about what you're hearing, and how do you think this is? What's it going to take to get the ball rolling here?
Well, that's a good question, Jeff. As you know, we have been very close twice to getting this done legislatively, and those two issues came up just short. And you know, the reasons that those two issues came up short are no longer in play. So I think we have a plan by the governor that has a lot of good points to it, a lot of merits. And I think we pick up some of the details of that plan, like, you know, the three counties that have been selected. I see no reason to go back and go through all that process again. I don't think there's any real big argument from anybody that those three should be the three. Now, obviously, the location within those three are of grave concern, especially to me, my district. You know, citing those on existing state-owned property where you already have the utilities and infrastructure is a big deal. So I think we take some of those details, put together a bond issue, and obviously I don't think it's any secret we've been working on that for quite a while, and I think we're pretty close to having that. We just need to get everybody in the room and work out those details, and hopefully we'll be in agreement and move forward.
Senator, how realistic is this? There's talk about taking some of the drawings or some of the schematics of the core civic of the lease proposal that's, you know, not going to see reality as is, and using a bond issue to do it, you know, as the legislature would. I you know, just off the top of my head thinking about it, if the state does this through the legislative process and bonds it out, there's not going to be that need to buy new land. Could you take this and apply it to our property the state already owns, or the existing where the existing facilities are? If I say, I find that to be a very, I mean, not unrealistic, but it seems like it's going to have some difficulties and challenges.
Well, I think it's fairly probable, and the reason that I think it is several different components to it. One of the components that people keep forgetting is if we went to these private properties, you have utility infrastructure that is not there. So you're talking about a year, 18 months, sometimes longer in some cases, especially when you're dealing with wastewater, to get those up. If you go to the existing properties, existing state-owned properties, you already have that infrastructure there. So, in fact, you may actually have a shorter timeline in that regard. And, you know, to me, you know, my background is in engineering and civil engineering, site engineering, that kind of thing. And I see no reason why we can't take the existing county state GIS information, including aerial photos, topography, overlay the prototype site plan that the DOC has. And, you know, we've paid HPM and others to come up with that. And put overlay all that and then put that out to bid along with the HPM specs that we've already paid for, and have the final design as part of that bid package. And, you know, in my career, the very first water tank job that I did in, you know, the early or mid-1990s, we did it that way, and we still do them that way. So I see no reason why we can't do that and expedite it. And additionally, we would do two separate bids, one on the civil site and get that done and moving very quickly, and then the other on the building infrastructure. You know, there's no reason to know where every light switch goes for us to start clearing and grading and doing storm work. So we can get moving pretty fast if we follow that type of process.
Well, what about the other hurdles? You know, Core Civic and the other group, they're in the business of building prisons and leasing them and making their money off that lease over time. Even though they were unable to secure the financing, the politics of that just didn't lend themselves to that at this time. Do you think that it's realistic to think that they would be open, this group would be open to doing something of that sort?
Well, I think the lease issue is problematic for the reasons that the financing was not able to be done. However, through a formal competitive bid process, I have no problem or no reason why they couldn't bid and be part of the construction of it. However, the state would own the facilities. And that's been my biggest hang-up all along. At the end of 30 years, we need to own these facilities, not have to enter in negotiations for additional lease and that sort of thing. That's the best and most efficient way to do it. So anyway, I'm hopeful that we'll get there and be able to have those state-owned facilities on state-owned property operated with state-owned employees. Now, we can put in that bid process, in my opinion, we can put in there a 30-year maintenance plan and have those bidders bid on those 30-year maintenance, a yearly fee for maintaining. We bring those back to the net present value, add it to the construction cost, and there's your lowest bidder. Not only lowest bidder, but most efficient and effective bidder, and there's a way to do that. And obviously, with my background, we've seen and done that type thing over the years. And I think that's what we need to do here. And those annual maintenance fees would be subject to annual appropriations, just like they were going to do that on the lease. Well, that it seems like that's gone by the wayside. So now we could have the best of both worlds, put it on state-owned property and have a 30-year maintenance agreement if we wanted to.
Senator, let's talk about the political side of it. And you talked about how exhausted you were from this last session and kind of watching the way that unfolded. You know, the Senate did a lot of heavy lifting, and things would go die in the House, and the House, they just never really got into gear on a few things. How do you feel about that, just coming out of this 2021 experience with the legislature, that it's even realistic, or that you think, you know, they say that we have no choice, but is it even probable to think that the legislature could get this done in a timely manner in a special session to start, like you say, getting the ball moving on this?
Well, I think the key to that is for a group of House members who are interested and sensitive to this subject to get together with a group of senators that are interested and sensitive to this subject. And we get together and then we hash out these details and come up with something that we all could agree on. And obviously we need a broad cross section of each body to do that. And historically, when you do that, say we have six, seven, eight from each body, And we hammer out the details, and that body's in agreement. And then obviously we get feedback from our other colleagues. And when you do that, then get obviously the governor's input along the way and approval of that. And when you have all three of those entities, House, Senate, and the governor, who agree on that type of plan, then, yeah, we could come back in, I believe, in a five-day session and get it done. What you don't want to do is to go into session and try to do all of that negotiation while you're in session. It's too difficult. It's too complex. It's too cumbersome. So I think a lot of that detail and negotiation would happen ahead of time. Now, that's not to say that we wouldn't get into session and there would be amendments and stuff in the legislative process that we would have to deal with. That's just the way our system is set up, and that's a good thing. But we could get very, very close before we even entered into the session.
Do you anticipate, you know, some of the opposition will be, well, let me ask you this before I get into that. The way the lease plan was handled, it was kind of done behind the scenes. There wasn't a lot of transparency. We were told, well, you got to do it this way to protect the negotiating process. Can you have a little more transparent process if the legislature's involved, and that way maybe the public has a little more willingness to accept it or whatever versus the way it was done with the leases?
Well, it has to be a transparent process. The legislature certainly is a representative of the people, and for us to represent the people, they need to know what we're doing, what we're talking about, and the details of it, and give us that input along the way. When we try to negotiate and do everything without the public input, and then all of a sudden here it is, there's a feeling of ramrodding and forcing things through, and that's not the way that we as the legislature need to operate.
Joined by State Senator Clyde Chambliss here on the program. Kind of running a little short on time here, but I wanted to ask you this, and one of your colleagues once told me you were a guy that lived and breathed asphalt and gravel, and there's road projects going up, and one of the big ones in your neck of the woods, I think long overdue, is Highway 82 and getting it done. But big picture-wise, and I know the Rebuild Alabama Act was supposed to address some of this. You know, we talk about how Alabama's behind on everything. Overall, your assessment, do you think, where do we are compared to the rest of the country with our infrastructure? And I mean, not with rural broadband or any of that, but just roads and bridges. Are we where we need, are we in line with other states? Are we behind the game? Are we ahead of the game? Where do you think we are exactly?
Well, it's an interesting question. From memory, I think we're kind of middle of the pack as far as the number of roads and bridges. So we have a lot, because we have a lot of streams and rivers, we actually have more or need more investment in infrastructure than a lot of states per capita. If you think about some, especially if you head out west, that very dry and arid, very few bridges. Well, we have a lot of bridges, and bridges cost a lot of money. So we have to invest more in our infrastructure per capita than some other states. So that being said, I think we're doing okay. The DOT's done a good job in trying to balance those resources. Now with the Rebuild Alabama Act and the taxes that are coming in with that, we have an opportunity to really make some advancements and catch up. I think we're doing that. It takes several years for that to really take effect. And, like the project in Prattville that you're talking about, Highway 82, I grew up on that road. And, many times, back in the day when I was a kid, we just ran our air conditionings on Sunday. So during the week, when an accident would happen in front of my house or nearby, I mean, you could really hear it. And I would look up and you'd see headlights, taillights, and then flipping and crashes and all kinds of stuff. And it was, so when we go to four lane those roads, that really cuts down on those type of crashes, makes them a lot more safer for our traveling public. So I think we're getting there. It's certainly takes a little time, but we're well on the way.
Well, and we'll wrap it on, up on this. Will we, you know, historically, and not maybe recent history, but before Governor Ivey, maybe Bentley and before, how much did politics really play into the way the roads, the road system in the states laid out? I remember as a young kid driving through Birmingham, and the interstate would just end before you got into Birmingham, and everybody has told me, well, that's because Governor Wallace didn't like Birmingham. They never voted for him, so he wasn't going to finish the interstates through Birmingham. I guess there's still an element of politics. If you voted against the Rebuild Alabama Act, you didn't necessarily get the big projects you wanted. But is there a healthy balance there to make sure that it's not political, but where it's more based on need, where these road projects are just designed to be a priority?
Well, you can never take politics out of politics. So that is part of the process. That's the way our system is designed. And it's one of the most interesting and awesome systems of government in the world. This governor, Governor Ivey, she actually really surprised me and a lot of other people when we were debating and trying to pass the Rebuild Alabama Act. She would not exchange projects for votes. And that has been the historic nature of roads and bridges and politics in Alabama. And she just wouldn't do it. And I witnessed that on a couple occasions. And fortunately, I witnessed it before I asked. So she just said, no. And I heard her say this. No, you need to vote for this because it's the right thing to do for our state. And, you know, and she would lay out the reasons why and that sort of thing. And obviously, she was successful in getting it passed. And that was a very interesting thing. So like this, you know, the Highway 82 project, I had no assurance. I had no certainty that project was going to be done. But, you know, in 2014, when I was campaigning for Senate for the very first time, that was a big deal to me. It's a big deal to my district, big deal to this area. And that's something that I really wanted to see done. And having campaigned on that at two different occasions, I saw an opportunity with the Rebuild Alabama Act to hopefully get it done. And then after the fact, you know, the governor saw that need and awarded it. And I'm just very pleased that that happened.
Senator, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. But thank you for making time for us. We always appreciate you coming on this radio show.
Thank you, Jeff. We'll talk soon.
All right. Say, Senator Clyde Chambliss, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break in. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Blessed Graceland whispers to me.